Hey folks, welcome to the Shitstorm Podcast with Mark and Mike. And here we talk about the shitstorm of life events and information from the media, from the internet, everywhere that is flung at us each and every day. And we dig deep to uncover a few golden nuggets and try to make some sense out of it all, some sanity from this chaos and this journey that we call life.
Hey Mark, there are several things that are newsworthy and that I really think that deserve to be talked about. And one of them, the first one I want to talk about is the special elections that were held last night. And while, you know, I've heard especially my Democrat,
Republicans. Are you talking about Ohio?
Well, Ohio, Kansas, there's Washington State, there's the first Muslim American woman who's going to run unopposed in Detroit. And they're all saying, you know, it's okay. A win is a win in Ohio, so that's all good. But the fact of the matter is, Trump won this district by 19 points. This shouldn't have even been competitive. It is only once since 1938 has a Democrat held this seat. And that was in 1980. And that person lost to John Kasich, who is now the governor of Ohio and has been for a while. By the way, not really a Trump supporter. But the point is, this seat is the absolute last seat that should have been competitive. And he's right now, nobody can call it. It's a little more than a 0.5% away. So while they won it, the seat's only going to be filled for 3 months, and then these two people are going to run off against each other. So and most of that 3 months is going to be a lame duck session. So it isn't particularly important as a win. So, but I'll give him a win as a win. So that's one thing. In Washington State, their female candidate for governor is poised to basically kick the ass of the Republican candidate for governor, which isn't that unexpected, except it's another chance that the Republicans thought they would pick up from the Democrats.
Do you think this is exactly what the news is indoctrinating about this whole blue wave kind of coming, you think?
Well, so this is where I'm getting to. Yes, I was going to talk about Kansas because there, Korbach, who's the old Secretary of State, who was in charge of Trump's discredited voter ID panel and is a real turd. I mean, as a person. He really is. But he's super Trumpian. And Trump at the last minute endorsed him. And so he's actually the previous governor was a guy named Sam Brownback, who became joined the Trump administration, and the lieutenant governor Colvey filled in, and that was since January. He was expected to win, but he's now in second place, but again, only by a couple of tenths of a percentage. And that's attributed to Trump going out to Kansas last week and endorsing Korbach, but that makes him a much weaker candidate against the Republican candidate, because Missouri may be a red state, but it's not deeply red. And he's nuts. He's crazy. So the blue wave is, by all accounts, not only coming, it's here. And
you mean they're starting to see chinks in the armor with the
Well, not just chinks. There are 45 or something legislative seats. 68 converted from Republican to Democrat since Trump has become president in special elections. The Republicans have only looked like won like a couple. One was in Georgia, which they narrowly won. They lost an Alabama seat because they ran a pedophile. They lost a Pennsylvania seat to Connor Lamb. And it's crazy. The red wave is real and it's here. And I, for one, couldn't be happier because I don't know that Trump will be impeached. Not even know if he should. Well, he should be impeached because he's the emoluments clause. Let me take a brief moment and explain what the Emoluments Clause says for those of our listeners who do not know. There's a clause in the United States Constitution which has never been invoked before for the simple reason that it's never been needed to be invoked before. But it says that a president or any public official cannot benefit from property or businesses they own in any way, shape, or form from a prince, king, or other foreign powers. Trump Hotel is generating $5 million a month in profits. He doesn't get all that because, you know, but the point is he's getting some. Two states and the District of Columbia have sued in court, in federal court, and the court has let those suits go forward. So Trump will be tried on violation of the Emoluments Clause. Even if he can't be indicted for it, which is an open question, but it's a different question, he certainly can be impeached for violating his constitutional oath to uphold the Constitution and all of its laws, not just the ones he likes. So that's big news, too. First time in our history that the Emoluments Clause has been invoked. the man, I, you know, it's hard for me to muster any sympathy for his son either. But, you know, his dad threw him under the bus. And he said, yeah, okay, so he was having a conversation in my tower with the Russians. But let's be clear, I didn't know. I mean, really? I was talking to my daughter about that. And, I mean, how can a father throw a son under the bus like that? It's just unbelievable. So, but I still don't feel sorry for him. And I don't feel sorry for Melania. She knew what she was getting. I think she never expected to be First Lady of the United States, and I don't think she likes it. But when you marry a guy like Trump, anything can happen. And I, you know.
Well, you know, I don't, she didn't know what she was getting, because I don't think, I honestly, and this is maybe another podcast another day, I don't think that marriage was based out of love.
Oh, I doubt it was too. But
yeah,
so
I mean, there's, you know, there's an arrangement there, and so now, yeah, I think that's the case. I'm not going to say anything more on that, but people might agree and say, no, you're wrong. But no, I'm pretty sure that's an arrangement. A guy who's that old looks that way and gets a beautiful young
and acts that way.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That was an arrangement.
And she won't
Come
even
on,
hold
guys.
His hand when they get off Air Force One.
You know, can you see Gold Digger in this one? I don't know.
What I can say is she came to this country illegally, and she's bringing her parents along, which is a chain baby kind of thing that Trump's trying to deny people at the border now.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, hypocrite.
Yeah.
Big hypocrite.
Yeah. There you go.
Did you hear? So, I'm going kind of fast because there's other big news to talk about, too. But, In sort of related matter, Robert Miller or Stephen Miller is pushing the Trump administration to change the immigration policy to make it harder for legally immigrated people. They've come here legally to become citizens. And the rule they want to change is if you use any social services, including Obamacare, which you're entitled to because as legal citizens, you pay taxes. If you do, those don't stop you from becoming a citizen, but they count as demarks and can add as much as 20 years to the process.
Hmm.
Now, that's for people who are already here legally. Now, that's just not right. So these are the things that are – but there was a lot of exit polling done yesterday by different people, and one of the biggest reasons why – Trump is losing his – not his losing. Why the Republicans who support Trump are losing or almost losing so closely? Suburban women, college educated, are extremely disgusted with this president, and they've said so. And his immigration policy and separating the kids at the border was the last straw for most of them. And that's almost universally been said by people in exit polls, women in exit polls.
Well, I would say those were mainly women that voted for Hillary Clinton. No one likes
Trump. No. These were mostly
really?
Women who voted for Trump. The women in Columbus, Ohio, which overwhelmingly went for Trump.
That voted for Trump, is that right?
Absolutely. He's losing virtually all of those women. Almost all. And the reason is people can't stand him. I mean, he's...
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I saw in the news the other day, and I just didn't know what that meant. So what did... So I guess Trump now added more sanctions against Iran, and Russia didn't approve?
Not Russia.
Well, no, he put sanctions against Iran, but Russia came out and said... He said, like, no, that doesn't fly with us.
Well, so what happened is he put, quote unquote, in his mind, the toughest sanctions ever in the history of the world, you know, but.
But didn't Russia say he's breaking the nuclear deal?
Well, so the deal with Russia is Trump said any country that trades with Iran will not be trading with us. Russia goes, well, because of the sanctions, we're not really trading with you. So screw it. We're going to trade with Iraq. I mean, with Iran.
But it had nothing to do with the nuclear deal that was made under Obama that he didn't...
That's why Trump pulled out.
Go ahead.
So the nuclear deal that Obama had negotiated, not just Obama, six other countries in Russia had agreed to, was that we would start lifting the sanctions if Iran would start dismantling its nuclear weapons. Well, they started dismantling their nuclear weapons. They, you know, it's funny because he said it was the worst deal ever. but it had verification of dismantling. It had full-on inspections, full disclosure of the nuclear sites in the country, and it had the destroying of centrifuges.
Well, then why did I read Arias were saying that we did not know, we didn't have verification that that was happening?
No, we did. That's why it was certified, and that's why the Europeans and even the Russians are certifying it. They're lying to you. People say stuff like this all the time. So, and the thing that the Israelis didn't like about it is only had a 10 or 15 year limit on it. So they were saying in 10 or 15 years, you know, they can start up again. Yeah, well, that's true. But the question is going to, will they want to, number one? And number two, even 10 years respite is a good thing. But the thing that's really super, super, super stupid about this, Trump said that was the worst deal ever. Horrible deal. I'm canceling it. He goes to Singapore, gets a piece of paper from Kim Jong-un that says, okay, we're going to denuclearize. We're committed to it at some point in the future, which, by the way, every single president since Reagan has been told that. And he called it the best deal, and we'd have gone to sleep safer because we're safer than the year before, than the day before he was, you know, became president. The deal has none of those things. We're not safer. The fucking guy is building more missiles. I mean, but Trump's base believes that we're safer. I was sitting in this place called Packy's.
Well, trust me, it's the best deal ever. I tell you, ever. It's the best.
and his base believes him, which is unbelievably, it's unbelievable that they, anyways. So, but
well,
yeah,
you
so
know, here's the thing: you don't see those articles in the paper or the headlines that are saying Kim Jong-un is pointing the missiles or that they're just not tolerating the U.S. I mean, you don't hear that negative spin on North Korea anymore. Go figure.
Well, why do you think that is?
You tell me.
Because right now there's so many other things that Trump has whipped up in the media that becomes an unimportant story. Right? They're not saying anything bellicose. Trump has stopped saying anything bellicose because if he does, we start concentrating on Korea again. But we certainly are not safer, and the nuclear deal with Iran was an actual internationally negotiated agreement that was verifiable, and the thing with Kim Jong-un is, hey, I shook his hand, I looked into his eyes, I loved him.
I looked into his eyes, and he just had a bunch of love for me, and he just, this is a very warm man.
And he told me I was smart, and anybody who tells me smart things, I automatically like.
Oh, man, he said I was smart. Yeah, that comes from a really, really highly educated person.
So I mean, that's the deal with.
You know, I think when I hear this, I listen to this. So you know, I was wondering about the intelligence of Trump. You might think that he's not the smartest guy, but he's savvy and he knows media. He knows how to spin it. Knows what he's doing. I don't think he's that ignorant. I think he might be a little nefarious in his motivations, but he's pretty savvy when it comes to doing what he's doing. And I think Mike Rowe said it best. I just heard Mike Rowe on Ben Shapiro's show. And Mike Rowe was saying that his show, when it was on, got bumped because of during the election period, because, you know, Hillary and Bernie Sanders and Trump, all the coverage what made the show had to go elsewhere, got bumped. And he had tweeted, Mike Rowe tweeted something to the effect of, hey, well, thanks, guys, you know, for pumping my show. He goes, I would love to, but, you know, I think he put in a request for something. He goes, what I need from, you know, what I would like from Hillary is this. What I want from Bernie is this. What I want from Trump is, he said, like a signed robe or something like that. He goes, the only one who responded to Mike Rowe, he got a signed robe from Trump, and he sold it for his charity. Because he did. He asked for Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump something for his charity since they canceled the show. And he said the only one who responded to him, he goes, which I was dumbfounded when he got it in the mail, was a signed robe from Donald Trump. And he goes, I just think Donald Trump is listening.
Well, so the deal is this. He may be listening, but he's not listening to facts. Right? So a request from somebody like Mike Rowe is one thing. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump... You don't
he
have
may not
to be smart.
Listening to facts. He's just a media machine himself.
Right. There's no question. He would never have been president without Twitter. But the fact of the matter is, that's no way to run a country. I don't think he's dumb. I just don't think he's smart. You don't have to be super smart to be a politician. You don't have to be super smart to be really good at media. It's like saying you have to be super smart to be a race car driver.
You know, something my father said to me, and you know this from being a businessman, most, like you said, a politician doesn't have to be truly smart. They just know how to hire smarter people to run the departments and, you know, the hierarchies that exist. So even my dad said, yeah, you know, he's just going to hire the best people to do what he's done. Now, I agree. You're going to say, yeah, well, he doesn't hire the best people. You know, Betsy DeVos and, I guess you could say Sarah Huckabee Sanders and others.
You say any of those fools.
Well, you've said this before. Betsy DeVos is the most incompetent person to have on the Department of Education. And
no, there's no question about it. But these other guys are terrible. Rick Perry for Energy Secretary. Ben Carson. Ben Carson in HUD. Education. No, the HUD. He claimed during the campaign that the Egyptian pyramids were built to store grain. And he also believes
that there were compartments for the grain.
The grain was there for the pharaohs to eat. They weren't barns. And then the other thing is, you know, the afterlife. And he also said the earth is 6,000 years old, and he believed the dinosaurs roamed with humans.
He believed what? Dinosaurs what? Roamed with humans?
Roamed the earth with humans. Because according to the Bible, the earth can only be about 6,000 years old.
Oh, he's using biblical
historical. I mean, think about that. They know the pyramids are a little over 6,000 years old.
It could have been some Cro-Magnon pre, you know, hominids.
No, they died 65 million years before the first Neanderthal was found.
That was proven, right? Yeah.
Absolutely proven. That asteroid off Mexico. Absolutely 100% proven.
Yeah, I'm a little certainly weary about religious perspectives if you think that's truth.
Yeah, but not only that, these guys are the guys running our country.
Well, I mean, isn't that been the case since, you know, I mean, even Bush, you know George W.
Yeah, he is.
So many evangelicals running. I mean, evangelicals, they just, you know, don't make pot legal. The stupidest thing in the fucking world.
Right. So, I mean, you can hate Obama, but I don't know why people do. But, I mean, he at least used science and policy to drive the EPA. Used science and policy to drive the educational reform, and they were working on prison and the criminal justice reform and all these things. So, anyways, it's a disaster, and it's getting.
It's
no,
a
it's
shit
just
storm.
A disaster.
Is it a shit
it's a
storm?
Shit storm. It is a shit storm.
Is Trump just crapping all over us? Is that
absolutely,
what it is?
Absolutely is, and he does it in a way that the thing is. About him, and the media statement is absolutely correct. But his supporters, what he said, which was ridiculous at the time, but has now been proven to be true, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose a vote. His base will not abandon him. Now, the difference is white women, suburban women who are college educated, have abandoned him in droves. And it's not gonna change. And so the treatment of the children at the border, which, by the way, there was a study done by his own government that debunked the theory that was a disincentive for people to come over. The rate of people coming over is virtually identical since and before, which, by the way, the net inflow of illegal immigrants into this country was negative. More people were leaving. So none of this stuff was done for good reasons. It was done to be mean. What I don't understand is if we can find $500 million to put kids in cages, why don't we find $500 million to reinstate Meals on Wheels? Why don't we take some of that $500 million, which would cost a couple of million dollars a year? Why don't we use some of that money to maybe start some roads or whatever? Why don't we take $1.5 trillion from the super wealthy who didn't need it and use that to fix the deficit? I mean, that's the other thing, is funding and spending policies are all wrong. And that's shitting on us more than anyone. Remember during the Obama years? I remember going into the Lobster, and a friend of mine, Susan, would sit next to me and David, and they would go on and on and on about the Tea Party because it was just starting back in 2009, and they were railed and just going crazy because of these deficits that Obama inherited from the Bush administration, and that's how the Tea Party started. I haven't heard one of these Republicans say, oh, my God, I can't believe Trump just increased the debt by $1.2 trillion this year.
Right.
Oh, that's hypocrisy. That's absolute hypocrisy. As a percentage of revenue, or GDP, if you prefer, when it comes to government, our deficits were going down dramatically under Obama every year that he was president. By the way, the economy that Trump inherited isn't as good as he would like you to believe. The growth in jobs has decreased under him, not gone up. There's a couple of reasons for that, but there are not more. There are fewer jobs each month being added than there was under Obama. The stock market performance under Trump for the first 18 months of his presidency is lagging dramatically behind that of President Obama. In case you're looking for numbers, it's 167,000 on average under Trump, and it was 237,000 a month under Obama. Now, those are monthly averages because, you know, and he said it had never happened that the economy went over 4% in a given quarter. Well, that's not true. It went over 4%, four times under Obama. In fact, and once it went above 5%, went all the way up to 5.3%. And when you average it across the year, the average was somewhere in the mid twos, because you have some quarters that are just naturally going to be terrible. Because it's just the demographics. Take summer, for example. A lot of people leave the country or go on vacation and go camping. They're not doing their daily buying and all the stuff that they do. You know, some companies, like the car companies, shut down for two weeks in the summertime. They're not producing anything.
I remember growing up on Long Island, and the you know, when you only had a few of the big car makers like GM and Chrysler. And what was the other one?
Well, you had Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors, and at one point you had American Motors.
Correct. So you had these these big car corporations in the U.S. And it was, I remember going to high school in shop class, when you had shop class, that it was known that you wouldn't buy a car that was made 2 weeks before hunting season.
Right.
Remember that? Because
I do. They'd sabotage the line.
You would think that because they just want to get out of there, and it's just shoddy work. And so you would have to go look at the when the car was made on the taillight. I guess there's a date or something like that.
I remember that.
And, you know, which was actually ridiculous, but I guess it works the same way now. I mean, well, with automation, that doesn't really count any longer.
It's far much of an issue. But
right.
Speaking of this, though. Because that was back in the heavy union days.
Yeah.
Ken Brownback, the ex-governor of Missouri, and this is in a red state, had the legislature had passed, and he had signed a right-to-work law, making Missouri a right-to-work law. It was challenged. There were enough signatures in a red state to challenge that. When it was voted on, it was voted down.
Hmm.
Republicans didn't win that issue. That should strike fear into them. That says most people are voting on Democratic issues. Otherwise, that would have passed.
There you have it. There you have it.
I mean, it's true. The country. So this is not uncommon. We have seldom had a president who's been so divisive and so swinging things so far in the other direction that it almost makes your head snap. And Trump is one of those people. There have been others who've tried. Reagan tried, but he was stifled too, because people are saying, look, I can't let this guy run amok in Washington with all these crazy people. The tax cut is hugely unpopular, even among Republicans, because the number of people that benefited was the top 1%.
You know, here's my like overall thinking, right? You go into the specifics and the minutiae of the details, just like you are involved in sports. You know the players on both sides really, really well, and the topics, and you discuss that. And I think that's why these podcasts are so interesting, because my brain doesn't operate that way. I always ask you questions because you're in it. My take from the, like, you know, I'm standing back in the bleachers looking, I'm going, all of this divisiveness, yeah, the government is running, it's doing what it does, it always does what it does, and then we have, we're looking at the players and the team. I mean, the same thing was under Bush. All the presidents, we feel the same way. It's like we're as spectators, everyone watching this and talking about it, like we're having podcasts talking about it, and people are heated, so damn heated and divisive. I mean, you go on dating sites, and women even say here in Los Angeles, if you're a Trump supporter, don't even bother swiping, right?
Yeah, that happens everywhere.
Everywhere. And I'm seeing it now in postings or rooms. People are like, no, don't even bother if you're a Trump supporter. So we've gotten to the point where they've elevated this game and heightened it to such a level that we are so involved in so much that we've become divisive to each other.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so the NFL... Like I've always said to anyone, yeah, you can fight for your life for the Giants and you're for the Falcons and you guys get into fights. But guess what? Yeah, the Falcons may win, but the NFL always wins. Regardless, they don't care who wins or loses. And I think that's what the government is. They don't care who wins or loses because they're always winning.
Yeah, the difference here is this is where I find
it. He's extreme. Trump is extreme. No, it's like unprecedented. We haven't seen this kind of extremism. It's like, how far can this go?
Not since the Civil War.
Well, how do you mean with the Civil War?
Well, because there, people left the country. The fighting and the animosity and divisiveness was so great between the North and the South that they actually had to fight a war to resolve it.
I mean, I've heard it. I remember reading, you know, constant stuff on Facebook, you know, where Bush is, I'm getting out of this country because this guy is...
Yeah, but they never did it.
Well, I kept seeing stats, people like, hey, people, you know, my friend always sends me stuff because he wants to move to, like, you know, the Dominican Republic, and he'd always send me stuff. Because we went out and shot this show. We were hoping to get it picked up called Expats, and we went to Panama. And the idea was we would travel to all these shows and talk to expats. And he would always send me these articles and saying thereafter that a lot of people are moving out of the country, you know, living here because you can live better for your dollar. And yeah, that's still going on.
That's all true. But
it's all true.
No, but the thing about Trump, that the thing about what's going on now and what people really have to be scared about is the policies he's putting in place are so overwhelmingly for the rich. And his Trump supporters still say, oh, he's fighting for me. He's fighting for me. Oh, yeah. How are tariffs fighting for you? But you know what tariffs do?
Oh,
they reduce the – pardon?
You were talking about the tariffs earlier. This has gotten worse.
Right. But so what they – yeah, it's getting worse. But you know what they do? They devalue the stock of certain companies. You know what happens when you devalue the stock and you got $1 trillion or a couple $1 billion? You buy that stock. But in the meantime, an entire company in South Carolina is closing its doors. The largest nail manufacturer in the United States is cutting workforce in half. Steel nails. You know.
Oh, I thought you meant like you know, nails. You know, fingers.
No, not this is the nails to build houses kind of company.
Oh, you mean the women in Beverly Hills are gonna have to pay more for their
a little bit more for their nail? I think it's okay. But it's things like this. They're putting in judges who want to take away a woman's right to choose. And if you believe – we talked about reproductive rights. They're putting in – right. He's putting in federal judges at a rate faster than anybody else because he knows he's going to lose the midterm. And then, you know, the Senate will still maybe be Republican. But if it isn't, he's got absolutely no chance of getting anything further done. And so – except for executive action, when Obama did it, it was a crime against humanity. When Trump does it, it's like him being Superman, according to his base. But in any case, you know, and so it's these sneaky long-term things that matter more than it does the short-term. Because frankly, his border policy can be overturned by the next president. His policy that says you can't use welfare if you're a legal person here but not a citizen, if you want to become a citizen, that can be overturned. These are not actions of Congress. So the next administration just whoop. 90% of the things that Trump has done, everything in the EPA, can be overturned.
Yeah, see that's something to consider. You know, that is something that's a really good point, Michael. Because you would think, you know, everyone thinks it's the end of the world when these policies get in place, but another president comes in and reverses the policies and makes the corrections. And that will be – whoever's going to be running is going to be – that's how it's always – portrayed as the next – who's the next Superman or Superwoman that's going to come in and save America? Because America's always in peril.
Right. And then you're going to have this Trump supporter screaming bloody murder, and I get it. But the fact of the matter is it was never intended to be governed this way, and I don't think it's healthy for our democracy. Now, did Obama do it? Yeah.
You mean because he's circumventing the balances and checks and powers?
Right. But see, when you have a president that has a Congress that's completely hostile to him, in the old days, even under Reagan, you know, even under Nixon, they would work and compromise because they felt it was their civic duty and they weren't elected to retain power and they weren't elected to even John McCain laments. They were elected to change policy in a way that benefits all Americans. And that means compromise. If you only do right-wing policies, you're going to irritate the left. If you only do left-wing policies, you're going to irritate the right, right? And these extreme policies are because we have a president that has a Congress that he can't work with. Now, in this case, that's astounding because this particular Congress is all Republican. But ruling by fiat. And I think ruling by fiat is contrary to what the founding fathers wanted, and it's also not good for the country because you're ruling with only one perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's never good. One of the reasons why I enjoy our talks and have for all these years we sometimes agree, sometimes don't, but we're always civil and we never say the other person's wrong.
Oh, when I hang up with you, I always say you're wrong. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm like, why am I doing this podcast? This guy is just off his fucking rocker. I'm only kidding.
So, but no, I mean, it's true, right? We just don't, there's no need to vilify the other person. So that's a big concern of mine too. And I think it's just not good for the country. And
it's like constantly battling each other. And I think that we mentioned this a little bit in the last podcast. It's called divide and conquer. United we stand, united we stand. Divided we fall. And we are, and the government is doing a great, well, I don't know if it's a government or where is it coming from. And, you know, you can say it's maybe a conspiratorial thing, but we are divided. We are very, very divided. And we're fighting each other. We can't agree and change because we just keep looking for the government to make our problems go away. And I'm saying
I don't think that's true. Well, I don't believe that to be true at all.
Here's the thing. You know, we were talking about this the other day. Maybe this is a good something to bring up. We were talking about the high rental prices here in Los Angeles and everywhere else, home prices and rental. It's just insane. And I said to you, you know, I'm a libertarian pretty much at heart. You know, when I don't want too much government interference, I like the free market. But the free market is kind of out of control. It's pricing me out of the market. And I don't know where I'm going to be living in a few weeks. And do I go – and I said to you, I said, you know, part of me is like, do I want regulation for this? I'm like, I don't know. But economists say, well, you look at the cities that have the highest rent are the ones that have rent control, and it doesn't work because it does that. And so I don't know where I stand with this.
I would say whatever economist said that's out of their mind, the rent in New York City, it's the most valuable rental market in the country, maybe the world. They have rent control. How has it really stopped it from being the most important rent in the world? I mean, see, a statement like that is just on its face stupid.
Well, if you have
one of the most valuable rental markets in the entire world, they have rent control. You got that, Alabama. They don't have any rent control.
Yeah.
And just like the other economics, they are not the most valuable. It's a backwards statement.
Well, I would say to you that that's the reason why it's the most expensive, because rent control exists.
I would say it's the most expensive because more people want to live there than there are places to live there. It's not because of rent control. If they added, I'll give you San Francisco as a great example, the peninsula. I used to live there. I owned a house there. If you look at a map of the peninsula, 100% of it is built on the coast, all the way up the bay, around the tip, and all the way down past, what's it called, Half Moon Bay, and then on down. And in the center, which is 15 maybe miles long, and all the way up the peninsula is federal land. Now, it's good that it is because it's beautiful and it's a reserve. But what that does is it limits the amount of land there is to build.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to put houses? The only place you're going to put houses is to add more land, which they did and they can't do. Like Foster City was landfill. The marina in the city was landfill. But there's ordinances against that too because the bay was shrinking too fast. Or you tear something down and put up houses. So that's why it's more expensive. It has absolutely nothing to do with rent control.
Well, I'd have to look at the economics of that. I've heard Thomas Sowell say that, and he's a pretty smart economist.
People say that because they want it to be – if you had rent control in Birmingham, Alabama, you'd crush the market because there are not more people that go there to live than there's available housing. And even if there were, there's available land.
Not many businesses down there. Maybe that's the low –
There's sufficient business.
Does that fall in line with your argument about that's the low regulation territory? So that's where people don't – same concept. You know, speaking of high rent prices, you just mentioned San Francisco. I remember reading an article about these. There's, you know, it's got so expensive that people are living in their RVs, and we have that here. But in San Francisco, you have people who are making coders are making $120,000 a year living in RVs because they can't afford to live. I mean, isn't that insane? $120,000 a year?
The real issue there is very simple to me. That doesn't mean it's simple to solve, but it's simple. More people want to live there than can live there.
So the free market is doing what it has to do.
Yeah. Now, is it a case that it should be regulated? Is it a case that the government should say, okay, if you have a business and you employ more than X number of people, you have to have a satellite office somewhere down the peninsula or somewhere else that or people can telecommute or – and I'm not trying to propose any policy, but some policy so people don't have to drive into the city And the reason that's important is if you have to drive into the city, I lived and worked there, and if you have to do that, you will find that your commute to work is probably 2.5 hours.
Damn, that's 2.5 hours one way?
Each way.
Each way. Who wants to live in their car? You do it here in Los Angeles. That's not a way to live.
It's not a way to live, but at least you don't have to spend 5 hours of your day, almost in it, or over half a work week, so, just getting to work.
So here's my thinking. I'm like, okay, so I have this high rent problem, so what do I got to do? Make more money. Now,
or, well,
you know, I mean, that is the deal. I mean, I'm caught in the matrix, my friend. I'm caught in this cycle of if I want to live here, this is what I have to do. And I don't want to
live. But even that's not necessarily enough for most people, because you can only work so many hours.
Well, it depends on what you're getting paid for. If you're just making...
Well, no, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the line of work you're doing. It certainly does motivate me to and push myself to get more, bringing my business up the line.
But that's the other thing in Los Angeles. Their growth rate in jobs is twice the national average. And by the way, it was under Obama. That had nothing to do with Trump.
Yeah, well, I've heard that what's driving it up here is that I think Google and Yahoo are moving in Culver City. And HBO is now opening a headquarters, so that's driving prices up dramatically.
Dramatically.
I mean, it's pricing me out of the market, and it's pricing so
many
people.
You're far from alone. Yeah, you're far from alone.
So where am I going to go? Am I going to bunk up with a bunch of college students, or
Or you might have to say I'm going to live inland, or you might have to say,
I don't want to live in Koreatown, man. And some people living. I just don't want to live. It's hot. It's congested. You get to a certain point where I've been living here a long time. But anyway, that's argument for a different day. These are just some of the problems.
These are musings. But the fact is...
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Can I change the subject a little bit?
Okay.
Unless you had something to talk about. Because I wanted to ask you about this tweet that Elon Musk sent down. Do you know about that?
You mean the one about where he's going to take their company public? Private?
I was impressed when I heard that. Man, I wish, and I was thinking about buying Tesla stock at the high price of $326, and I didn't that day, and it went up $2.
But you would have made, But actually, there's some argument that he committed insider trader fraud, but because he influenced the value of his stock, made it go up right before so there's a good case that he committed a crime there, and they're looking into that, which you're not supposed to. If you're the CEO of the company and chairman of the board, and you know you're going to take your company private, the very last thing you're supposed to say is I'm taking my company private.
Yeah, you work for you're an executive of a company. You just don't do that, right? You
can't do. That's why that guy Chris Collins is indicted. He actually didn't even buy any stock. He lost some money, but his son. Oh, I meant to talk about this. Now I'll get back to Elon Musk. The reason he's in trouble. He was arrested this morning, not just indicted and later arrested.
Who are you talking about?
Chris Collins, a Republican representative from New York, who was the very first Trump supporter in Congress. He is the chairman of the board of this Australian energy company. I think it's an energy company. Their stock was going to tank. He was in the White House. He called his son in Australia. He called his son's wife's father, called a couple of cousins. And since it was in a government building, they have records of all this stuff, including transcripts. And they all sold their shares for a couple of million. And it tanked after that.
Mm.
That is classic. It's defrauding investors. It's classic investment fraud. It's classic insider trading. There's all kinds of crimes associated with that. And each person he told it to is another crime. Each one carries 5 years.
You mean even the person that sold the stock he told it to are indictable?
No, he told it to his son. He told it to his son's father-in-law.
And their son's, the person who sold the stock he told it to can also go to jail or be fined?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. Martha Stewart went to jail for doing insider trading.
That's right. She did. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah. And plus he could go to, the son could go to jail in the United States, also in Australia, because the shares he sold, some of them were listed on the Australia exchange, which gives jurisdiction.
So he'll do half time in the US and half time in a penal colony. And
well, he won't get out. The other thing is, could Trump pardon him? Cause this is done in the Southern District of New York where Michael Cohen is. And the answer is yes, he could. But even if he did, that wouldn't matter because it's also a violation of New York law. It's also a violation of D.C. law, which is federal. It's also a violation of federal.
Is this all playing out right now?
Just started this morning.
Is that right? Okay.
And these are people who Trump picked as the best. You know, I mean, this is just – now, the representative doesn't have any official position, but major Trump supporter and, you know, has carried the water for Trump since the day Trump announced his presidency, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, as with Elon Musk, forgetting about the potential crime, the reason he doesn't want to have the company public, of course, is because he's not meeting his financial targets. They're not selling enough cars. And then that means the stock will tank, and then the production overruns. And a public company has to give, you know, all kinds of information, not only Sarbanes-Oxley, not only information about Reg D, and not only information about all the other financial aspects, but to Wall Street. This is what we think we're going to earn. This is what we think we're going to produce. This is a schedule on earnings and why we think it's legit. And when they don't make those, the Feds take a dim. I mean, yeah, the guys on Wall Street take a dim view of that generally.
Yeah, and he's even said in conference calls that, well, we don't know if we're going to make our projections this quarter, and then the stock tanks and, you know, goes down, you know, 15% in 24 hours, and then the executives and stockholders are screaming at him.
Right. So like, but I'm just that's why it makes sense.
Yeah.
Plus he gets more money because he's going to get big investors, but he's got to buy all the shares to take it public, a private, remember.
Yeah, so he did say something gets like $420, so he'd have to pay all those investors out at $420 a share.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the cash yet to do that.
Well, that he's got some Saudi investors that are just...
Yeah, to the tune of $8 billion, but if you multiply it out, it's $83 billion that he needs.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. But you can actually do that. Why does it have to be so high? Can't he just say, hey, I'm going to take my company private and I'm going to pay, $150 per share?
Would you sell your shares to him for that?
What's that?
If you bought your shares at $300, would you sell them to him for that? You don't have to sell your shares. They're yours.
So if you hold on to the shares and he makes the company private, you are also now a private investor?
You can't. If the deal is approved and he buys it back, and then he's got to get the shareholders to agree to the deal.
Right.
And if the shareholders – now, if the majority of the shareholders agree and there's a certain percentage, then, yes, everybody sells their shares. Or I guess you can issue shares of the new private shares. But anyway.
Okay. So. Okay. That was something I just wanted to – I was curious about. Anything else, Michael? We're just about coming to the end of the show. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, except making the basic point that
he's a nut, he's crazy, and
but he's so far from draining the swamp, and he's so far from helping the little guy. He is a swamp, and he's taking people's insurances away. Starting September 1st, he's going to offer these terribly ridiculous insurance plans that provide no coverage. Yes, they're going to be cheap, but they're going to have no coverage when you need it, and it's a horrible thing. Even the insurance company doesn't want him to do that. So I am sick of the man. I'm sick of everything that's going on. Blue wave. Even if you don't vote blue, vote blue. It's got to be stopped.
Yeah, I guess that's the only way. That's exactly here. Here's the thing. A friend of mine always said this to me. You want to vote. Every time you buy something, you're voting for it. So that's the power we have as people, is where you're spending your money. So you can make the listener make informed decisions and decide how you want to exercise your power, what you're buying. We have a Patreon site, since we're talking about buying.
Yeah, we do.
And we would love your support. That would be great. Patreon.com /.
You can access it through our site under the support tab.
Yeah, that would be great. But I didn't really mean that segue. But honestly, truthfully, people, we are, you know, and it's a reminder to myself when I say this, that we feel powerless under all of this stuff. You know, we're having these conversations and talking about the shitstorm that just constantly comes out of this guy and the administration, and what our power is, stop fighting amongst each other. Let's be civil. Let's have conversations. Let's move the humanity forward and be cautious on what you're buying. Really.
Let me give you one final closing thought as to how powerful this really is. You can go back to Ralph Nader in the Bush-Gore elections.
Love Ralph Nader.
But he cost Al Gore the election. And he did it for no reason.
That's what they keep saying.
But it's not the point. It isn't the point. This is what I'm about to say is the point. Yesterday in the Ohio 12th special election, there is a Green Party candidate. He got about 1% of the vote. There's an expectation that was about 90% taken away from O'Connor, Danny O'Connor, which means he would have had more than enough to win. So what's the worst evil for a person who's a Green candidate? a Republican who denies climate change or a Democrat who supports climate change. You vote your conscience because you don't want to vote for a Democrat or a Republican, but you are, your voice is insignificant when you put it on the in that ticket. It's insignificant. They could have actually made a difference in their agenda. Maybe not a full step, but they're down, they're backwards a half step. Where if you had voted the other way and just voted, you would. And so the Ralph Nader thing. Al Gore lost by 527. Hold on. Well, he lost, but you know, wait a second. Of course he buys it. He lost by a total of 527 votes. 527.
Yeah. How many of the 93,000? So no one ever votes for a third party candidate. We've talked about how much we need a third party candidate.
Wait, no, but I'm talking about realistically when it comes to the actual election. So, you know, I am certain that Ralph Nader cost him the candidate, the presidency. I'm certain of it. But there's other reasons too. Pat Buchanan won Palm Beach County. Even he said there's no way I won Palm Beach County. If you looked at the ballot that year in Palm Beach County, the tag for him and Al Gore were almost exactly across from each other. But
yeah,
in any case,
Ralph Nader could have won maybe if they would have let him into the debates. They locked him out of it.
But the fact of the matter is, you can talk about the system and you can say how we need to transform the system and you can say the political parties need to be adjusted. That is all true, and I support third parties. However, when there's an election and the only choices you really have are George Bush or Al Gore, who is closer to your agenda? Because those are the only two people. One of those two is going to win, period.
That's Ralph, just the, what I'm saying to you is Ralph Nader came close, and they locked him out of the debates. And if he was in the debates, he may have won because he would have had that more support.
But he did come close. But let's say he was in the debates and he was on the ticket in Florida.
If it was 520 votes, I'm sure that if he was in the debates, those 520 votes plus would have been locked in for Ralph Nader. It was a strategic.
No, he got 93,000 votes. He got on the ballot in Florida 93,000 votes. Those votes would have overwhelmingly gone to Al Gore, because there's no way in the world that Ralph Nader supporters are voting for George Bush. That's a non sequitur.
Correct.
So that means they would have gone to Al Gore. Al Gore lost by 527. He would have won by 91,000. There is no question about that. When it comes to the actual election yesterday in Ohio, my point I'm making is the point you were making. You have a vote. You have three choices. Vote against your interest, vote for a vote that's insignificant in the outcome, or vote the least best choice. In other words, that choice which is closest to what you value, but it might not be all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
And in all those cases, least best would have been the Democratic candidate. Okay. That's a term I used to use in business all the time.
What's that?
Least best.
Least best.
I mean, what it really means is if you have a bar and you're doing a point analysis on a solution, say a software solution to a problem, and you do evaluation and this one in the bar is in the middle and you get a check mark and it's just under the bar and you get a check mark that's further low and a check mark that's up there and you get a check mark that's way up there because that is by far the best, one in the middle and one just above the bar. What is the solution you take? You take the one just above the bar because it meets your requirement. It's going to be the lowest price. It's the least of all the best solutions. There's three best solutions in that scenario. The least best is one just above the bar. It's the exact same argument here. The Republican was 100% under the bar. Danny O'Connor might have been just above the bar, but he was still above the bar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Least best. Okay. Let's end it right there.
All right.
Perfect.
Okay.
Why don't you give our information out, Michael? Where they can locate us and talk to us and give us information and ask us questions.
So at Instagram, it's at Shitstorm Podcast, all spelled out, S-H-I-T Storm Podcast. On Twitter, it's at Shitstorm Podcast. And Facebook, it's S-H-T Storm. You know, facebook.com/S-H-T Storm, but it's at S-H-I-T Storm. And I'm sorry for the confusion, but that's the way we had to do it.
Yeah, Facebook, no I. No I's in Facebook.
Yes.
All right, folks. All right. Thanks, Michael. Good talking to you.
Yep, you too. Take care. See you later.
Bye-bye.